compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, it's that time, the third hour of the program, and you'll see it's going to go by fast. So call now, 888-914-9149. That number is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Mary in Phoenix. Hello, Mary. Welcome.
Hey, Patrick.
Hi.
I wanted to talk to you about being pro-choice or pro-life. I have a hard time not being pro-choice, and I'm sure that I'm making some mistake in my reasoning, and I wanted you to help me.
Okay.
But let me tell you, Patrick, so I am fully against abortion. I think it's horrible. It's murder. I went through a personal experience myself that really, you know, scarred me. For life. Thank God for confession. And so I wouldn't recommend that to anybody. But I do feel like...
How old were you when that happened, by the way?
I was 40.
Okay. And married?
Yeah. Married.
Okay.
Yeah. I even hesitate to tell you because now that I am, I reconnected with the Catholic faith. I realized what I did.
Yeah. I understand.
But it was, you know, I'll just be honest with you. We did a test. At the time, I wasn't, you know, religious at all. I was, you know, as they say, spiritual. But we did a maternity 21 test, and the test came back positive for chromosomal you know, problems, and we decided to take that decision. We took it fast, you know, so that the procedure wouldn't be as, you know, complicated. But it's just a horrible thing, and, you know, I wouldn't recommend that to anyone.
Well, let me ask you a question, Mary. It's interesting because you started by saying you have a hard time not being pro-choice. Is that right? Did I hear you right? Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, maybe you thought about this, but the question that comes up in my mind is, given the fact that you, as you just pointed out, you know that what you did was terrible, why not let go of that? Why embrace something terrible and defend it? Why not just let go of it and be healed from it? Wouldn't that be better?
You know, Patrick, I think my thinking, and again, please, I just want you to tell me what the right thing is, but
sure,
I just,
sure.
You know, that's why I wanted to share this with you, because I feel like it's a religious argument, you know, that what you're carrying in your womb is something, it's a new life made by God and unique, and, you know, it's because for some people, unfortunately, and I think that is so wrong, but for some people, that's just a clump of cells, you know, and
Let's stop there for a second. I agree with you, Mary. There are people who say that's just a clump of cells. And when you think about it, you're just a clump of cells and I'm just a clump of cells. I mean, there's more cells in my clump than there were when I was an unborn baby. But the clump of cells argument itself is not even really an argument. I know you're not making that argument, but when people say that, it reminds me of how white slave owners said, well, they're not really people, the slaves that I own. They're not human. They're something. They're subhuman, quasi-human. I mean, they had different arguments, and that was their rationale, their justification to say that it's okay to own slaves because they're not really people. And of course, we know that that's ridiculous. They're really people. The slaves, the men and women, the boys and girls were human beings. They were people just like us, different skin color, but who cares? And when people tell you, well, that's just a clump of cells, it's basically they're using the slave owner mentality to dehumanize these unborn babies and say, well, they're not really human. It's just a clump of cells. And, you know, when you think of it in light of slavery and what an evil and terrible thing that was and how the white slave owners tried to rationalize this sin by saying, well, they're not really people, you know, and we can see right through that, can't we? We know that that's bogus, right?
Absolutely. Yes, yeah. Yes, yes.
And it's true with abortion too. Point. It's true with abortion.
It's so true.
Yeah.
It's so true. I never thought it that way. I just thought, like, you know, for people who are not religious, like, you know, when the baby is, has developed more, you start creating ties with other, you just start becoming, let's say, quotation marks, more human, you know, because mm-hmm. you start, you know, creating more attachments with other people. And so it gets to the point that the baby is born and, you know.
Oh, I know the arguments. I'm familiar. You know, but you can't really become more human, right? So you can't get more pregnant. You're either pregnant or not pregnant. Now, the baby grows inside you. But it's not like you can't be a little bit pregnant, right? You can't be kind of pregnant. You either are pregnant or you're not pregnant. And the same is true mm-hmm. when it comes, I mean, I know you know this, but to just share with you, you know, you and I sharing on this together, you can't become more human. If this unborn mm-hmm. child is human, he's fully human, not fully developed yet. But all of us went through that point. But just to come back to my question, and I'm asking as a friend, I'm asking as somebody who cares about you.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it make more sense to let go of the very thing that causes you pain and not defend it? You know what
Absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. I just wanted to understand it, to properly defend it and, you know, be sure in my head. And be able to, because I was thinking, isn't this a religious argument? And I don't want to impose my, I mean, I think educating people and talking to them is one thing, but imposing my religion, I am not for okay. it, you know?
Let's look at it. Let's look at that.
I was thinking.
So would you say that being against slavery is a religious issue? I mean, it could be a religious issue, but isn't it really just a moral issue independent of religion?
Yes.
So would it be imposing immorality on somebody to say, I'm voting against any pro-slavery candidate, to stand up and say that you're an abolitionist, you want to abolish slavery because it's evil and it's unjust? I mean, that's not really a religious argument. You're just saying this is deeply immoral. And mm-hmm. religion aside, even an atheist could see that slavery is evil. And I would propose that abortion is even more that way. I mean, as evil as slavery was, abortion mm-hmm. is even more of an affront because it's the killing of a person. If it's wrong to enslave a person,
mm-hmm.
why should we say that that's a religious argument to say it's wrong to kill an innocent person? It's not really a religious argument. It's
so
a moral
maybe
argument.
The argument would be, I am more and more agreeing with you. But I just want to really clarify this in my head, you know, so I can be fully on board.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be a religious argument saying that what is, you know, the beginning of life is not exactly mm-hmm. a person yet?
Say the question again. I want to make sure I understood you.
Okay. Wouldn't it be a religious argument saying that the beginning of life in your womb is a person?
I think it's a scientific and philosophical argument, because mm-hmm. the personhood, of course, we don't associate personhood with animals, for example. We love mm-hmm. animals. We like animals. We take care of animals, but they're not persons in the sense that a human being is a person. You'd agree with that, mm-hmm. right? Okay. So there's something unique about the unborn human, that one of the difficulties for people who promote abortion is for them to arbitrarily decide, when does that unborn thing become a person. And they really can't do it. They really can't say what happens at 3 months or 6 months. I mean, there are arbitrary markers that they'll use. Well, brainwaves or heartbeat or feeling pain or, you know, things of that nature. It's purely arbitrary. And the simple, easy, scientific, fact-based way of answering it would be that at the moment of conception, when that life begins, that is a human person from that moment forward. And and that's why, you know, if somebody says, well, they don't become human until they pass through the birth canal. Really? Who said that? How does that work? You know, what happens in passing through the birth canal that makes this person human? And so there are all kinds of gyrations and somersaults and backflips trying to, but the people who make that argument, it's not even really an argument. It's an assertion, but it's not based on anything. And and I would propose that human life begins at conception. Science has demonstrated that. That's when it begins. And it's not the mother's body. It's in the mother's body, but it's not like a kidney or a lung. I mean, it's separate DNA, separate organs, and so on. It's a little tiny human being growing. And so my heartfelt suggestion, Mary, would be the key to resolving this issue for you would be when you can get to the point where you can just look in the mirror and say, yeah, that was an unborn human being. And I imagine how painful that would be. But that's when the healing begins. And to defend abortion, which, as you already pointed out to me, you know deep down inside the pain that causes you. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but am I right about that? Am I reading that right? It's causing you pain?
Absolutely. No, and Patrick, I trust me, I look in the mirror and I think it's a horrible thing that I did, you know, and I will forever have to live with it. But I just thinking of imposing, you know, this logic on others, but you did what I wanted you to do. You convinced me. So this is why I called, because I needed to just like have this thought trade in my head about, you know, not so much myself, but for other people. I just didn't want to impose my beliefs on other people.
Let's think about that. Okay. Do you believe, let's just look at a couple different options here. Do you believe that sex trafficking of children is wrong, or is that just your personal belief?
Oh my gosh. No, it's a horrible thing.
Horrible thing, right?
No, so if you allow to do it,
if you were to stand up and say sex trafficking of children is wrong, it's evil, and I want it to stop, would you be imposing your will on other people, or would you be simply acknowledging what everybody knows deep down inside, and that is that this is evil and it should stop? I would say the latter, right? You're not imposing your religious beliefs, are you?
No, no.
Okay. Do you believe that embezzling millions of dollars from a company is wrong?
Yes.
Okay. So if you were to stand up and say embezzling money is wrong and it's got to stop, are you imposing your religious beliefs on anybody?
No.
No, of course not. You're just identifying a real problem. And I think maybe it's coming into view now that you can see that in the same way when you say, I oppose abortion because it's wrong, it's the taking of a life of an innocent human person, you're not imposing religious beliefs. You're just acknowledging something that I believe everybody at some level recognizes is wrong. And I wonder, Mary, if the reason that you've had this sort of block that hasn't let you do that is because of your own abortion. And that would mean repentance and forgiveness and turning away from it, which is a beautiful thing. And that's what God wants for you. He wants to heal you. He loves you. He doesn't condemn you. He doesn't want to condemn you. He wants to heal you. But I think it seems like the thing that might be blocking that from happening is your, at least before today's phone call, not being willing to say, that's evil. I shouldn't have done it. I'm sorry I did it. But that's where the healing starts.
I'll be honest with you. I disagree because this happened to me. I think it was a reasoning issue, and you kind of addressed it with when it's arbitrary, when life really starts. Mm-hmm. And this was, I think, the argument I was looking for. You know, I felt like it was a rational thing, not so much a feeling thing, because I knew it was wrong, but I just couldn't reason through it, you know, and that's why I called you, because I needed that help. No, I think what I did was horrible, and I regret it dearly. And
yeah. Well, God wants to heal you. I don't think I even asked you if you were Catholic.
Yeah, no, I reconnected with the faith about a year ago, and I just got my confirmation, and I love the faith, and I'm very, very grateful. Yeah. But yeah, when I had the abortion, I wasn't, you know, particularly, I wasn't, you know, I knew it was wrong, but I didn't have this conviction that I have right now. So yeah. It's something I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy.
Well, the good thing is that, of course, God loves you and he wants to heal you. He wants to take this pain and all of the feelings that I can only try to imagine that you're feeling, to take them away and replace them with the happiness and joy that this cost you. And it's just one good sacrament of confession away.
Yeah, I did, Patrick. I confessed, and but I still, it's something I'll just carry with me.
I know.
My entire life, you know.
I know. I'm sorry that you had to carry this burden, Mary. I don't know where in the Phoenix area you live, and I'm not asking you to tell me, but I would like to recommend a beautiful parish that's not too far for you to drive to. It's called St. Bernadette's Catholic Church. It's in Scottsdale. And I would like to make a suggestion that you just take a trip over there. It's on North 60th Street in Scottsdale. I'm sure you know where that is. You know where that is?
Patrick, I'm sorry.
That's okay. So just jot it down. St. Bernadette Catholic Church. It's on North 60th Street in Scottsdale. And my thought would be if you could go over there, maybe during the daytime, I don't know if you're working outside the home or not, but if you could find some time when there's not going to be a whole lot of people in there and you could just go in and sit with the Lord for a while, and just talk with him about this and just pray in front of the Blessed Sacrament. I think that would really help.
That's a really good idea. I'll do that.
Okay. Well.
Thank you, Patrick, so much. Thank you. I just needed that argument, you know, because I couldn't reason through it, you know, and, but trust me, I know what I did was very wrong.
Well, I understand, and I'm here for you, Mary. We're all here for you at Relevant Radio. And the beauty of what's happening right now is that God is preparing your heart for healing. And that's what you want, right? You want to be healed.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you can count on my prayers, Mary. All of us listening, a lot of people out there listening right now will be praying for you in a very special way, Mary. Thank you for that. Check out St. Bernadette Catholic Church in Scottsdale on North 60th Street. Spend some time with Jesus there. Pray. And if you want to call me back in a few weeks or something, please do. I'll be right back. This hour is supported by Notre Dame Federal Credit Union. Join the nation's largest Catholic-oriented credit union and receive $200 when you add a direct deposit. Learn more at NotreDameFCU.com/join. That's NotreDameFCU.com/join.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Hey, that's some good music right there, Cyrus. Well done.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I came up with that one on my own.
You're doing well. Maybe a little something extra for you in your Christmas stocking this year. 888-914-9149. Let's go to John in New York. Good morning, John. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Patrick. Is there any truth at all to Pope Gregory the Ninth somehow declaring cats evil? I recently read it in a cat magazine, and I thought it was outrageous. And can you just enlighten me, please?
I'll do my best. So did you say a cat magazine? Is it like for cat lovers? All cats all the time?
Yeah, I love cats, and I was reading an article, and they said how Pope Gregory declared cats evil, causing the deaths of thousands of cats. Now, I'm a devout Catholic. I don't believe everything I hear or read, especially about the church.
Yeah.
So that's my question.
Okay. So I'm not an expert on the topic, but I have heard this before. And when the last time I heard about it, I looked into it. There was... Cyrus, leave that cat alone, Cyrus.
I'm not going near that.
They got problems enough as it is, Cyrus, these cats. Stop touching the cats.
I'm not going near these cats.
Don't make you pay for it. All right. Just shoo the cat outside. There he goes. Okay. Cyrus, they've got problems enough as it is. You know that. So, John, when I did look into this some years ago, I couldn't find any evidence to it at all. And it has to do with, I forget now if it was an encyclical or a papal bull that the Pope allegedly said that cats were demonic. And I could find no evidence that that's the case at all. And one of the things that I did was that I looked in the Catholic Encyclopedia, that in this case was the one that came out around 1910, 1912. And it has an article on Pope Gregory the Ninth, but it doesn't say a single thing about this. And it's the kind of thing that would have been said had it been, if there was something real to it. Now, I admit I haven't actually read the Latin of the bull itself. I'm not sure if it's readily available, but in my looking into it before, I couldn't find anything that supported this claim that he declared the cats were evil. He might have said something about cats in this document, but it certainly has not been picked up as something that was like a focus of what he said or anything like that. So I think it's a fanciful notion that's not based on actual history. Now, if it turns out I'm wrong, then I'm wrong, but I don't think I'm wrong on this issue. That's my take on that.
Well, thank you, Patrick. Much appreciated.
You got it, John. Thank you. And that's one of those oddities that maybe I'll try to look into further. And if I find something different from my stated comment here, I will let you know what I find out one way or the other. 888-914-9149. Cyrus, those cats were not happy at all.
Those were evil cats for sure.
Man, oh man. Okay, how about Salvador in Sacramento? Good morning, Salvador.
Good morning, Patrick. Happy Monday. God bless you all at Relevant Radio.
You. Thank you, sir.
And you're welcome. I have a question and a few points. I want to need your advice and recommendation. I have a friend that I dearly love. As my brother in Christ, we were having a conversation yesterday. How do I explain that there is a hell? He believes that there isn't in hell, that there is not a hell. He says that there's only two roads when we die. We either go to heaven, that's our reward, mm-hmm. or we stop existing, but there isn't a hell. And I told him, well, that doesn't make any sense. How can that make sense if God is, you know, God is all loving, but he's also just? Mm-hmm. How can someone that lives their life in a very sinful way, and it's a really bad person and kills people and murders people, mm-hmm. Have that option of just to go to heaven or just stop existing? It doesn't make right. any sense to me.
What religion is this guy? Is he Jehovah's Witness or Seventh-day Adventist or what religion is he?
I think he's a Jehovah's Witness. I haven't really asked him, mm-hmm. like, you know, what denomination or what religion he is. But he reads the Bible. I mean, he has a little bit knowledge on it because, I mean, he mm-hmm. does acknowledge Jesus Christ, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. He does acknowledge that. But and then he does also acknowledge that that Satan exists. And he says, well, Satan is not really being punished because he chose to be away from God. And I said, well, that's the biggest punishment for Satan, mm-hmm. that he's being tormented and going to be punished for being away from God. And that's mm-hmm. something that had happened to us. And so he also brought up, he said, well, I just can't seem to wrap my head around that there's an all-loving God that if you're a good human being and you just don't practice your faith, he's going to punish you with hell. And I said, well, it's not enough for God just to be a good person. You have to practice your faith. Mm-hmm. That's the number one commandment, right? And so okay. I just couldn't. I tried to look up videos last night. I even tried to look up YouTube videos where I can find of you explaining like this particular scenario that there is a hell and that.
Yeah, I think I get it. I understand where you're coming from. And how about if I give you a few thoughts that you can use next time you have a conversation with him? Sound good?
Sure.
Okay. So the reason I'm inclined to think he's a Jehovah's Witness is because they believe in a doctrine that is not biblical. It's not true, but they believe in what's known as a soul sleep, so that when you die, your soul is basically asleep. It's not aware or awake or doing anything. And that on the last day after Armageddon has taken place, that the souls of those who are evil will be destroyed. So they'll be annihilated and will no longer exist. That's probably consistent with what he's telling you, right? Okay. That there's no hell. Is that what he's telling you? There's no hell?
Correct.
Okay. So I'm guessing he's probably Jehovah's Witness because this is one of the hallmark features of their religion. They also, just as an aside here, they don't believe that everybody goes to heaven. In fact, they don't believe that most people who die as Jehovah's Witnesses will go to heaven. They believe in what's called paradise earth, and that the 144,000 mentioned in Revelation chapter 14 will be present in heaven, and that's a strict number. But everyone else will be on paradise earth, not in heaven with God directly, but on paradise earth. Is that part of what he's telling you?
We didn't get to that point just because okay. we were just kind of having a little debate on whether hell existed or not. And right. so then my next thing would be, given that if he is a Jehovah Witness, I kind of mentioned, you know, hey, I have the diary of Saint Faustina. You know, the great mystic, God permitted a vision for her to be able to see, you know, hell, through her angel. Then I also recommend the Dogma of Hell book. But given that he might be a Jehovah's Witness, I don't know if he'll be open to, you know, start reading the diary.
Yeah, I wouldn't start there. I don't think that's a helpful place to start. It's good, I mean, but it's kind of, it's not basic enough for him. So what I would say to him, number one, is that the Bible talks a lot about hell. Jesus talks a lot about hell. And he talks about this as an everlasting punishment. And for example, in Matthew 25, when he talks about the sheep and the goats, he says that the blessed, the sheep, they go off to their eternal reward that's given to them by God. And that the goats, the ones who are damned, go off to their eternal punishment, the never-ending fire, the unquenchable fire, as he sometimes talks about it. So Jesus refers to hell repeatedly. Luke 12:5, I warn you whom to fear. Fear him who, after he is killed, has the power to cast into hell. Yes, I tell you to fear him. He talks about those who are going to go to hell as a result of their unrepentance. And this is replete in the teachings of Jesus. So that's the thing I would point out is that, you know, I'm going to go with Jesus on this one because he says that hell exists and people really do go there. And he says that it is permanent. It's an eternal thing. And when he says, for example, in Matthew chapter 10, do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather, fear him who can destroy both body, both soul and body in hell. And the destruction, this may be what he's thinking of as the annihilation of the soul. But this is not referring to the annihilation of the soul and the body, but rather that this is the eternal death that one experiences in hell, death, the separation from God, and all the pains that come with it. So my thinking would be if you concentrate on this and help him see that the Bible is very clear that hell does exist and people really do go there. And your point about the justice issue, that's a good point. You know, God is all just, and it would not serve or glorify his justice if he just simply destroyed things. And keep in mind, too, that God is the author of all good. He is good in himself. It would be contrary to his nature to do something that was inherently evil. And to eliminate one of his creations as a person, you know, the human person or an angelic person, would go against his love-based, life-giving nature to create things that are good and keep them, sustain them in existence. So to destroy something that he had made to with the intention of living forever with him in heaven would be contrary to that. Now, that's a little deeper theology than he's probably ready to get into. But I would concentrate on that level. Then maybe give him the Diary of St. Faustina. The Dogma of Hell book is also a good one. And lastly, if you'd like some Bible verses and quotes from the early church fathers, Catholic Answers has a number of tracts that are available for free in digital form on their website. So if you went to Catholic.com, you'd be able to pull up some of these and then share them with your friend and say, look, here are 25 Bible verses. There are plenty others, but here are 25 where Jesus and the apostolic writers of the New Testament talk about hell. That will help him as well. So thanks for the call. Let me know how it goes. Give me a call in a month or two and let me know if you've made progress. I hope that you will. Thanks for that. Why don't we quickly go to Teresa in Florida? Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning, Patrick. Hoping you can help me.
I'll try.
I have miraculous metals, and I had checked mine when I listened to a podcast or whatever. I know that they should have visited some. I'm not sure though where I got it from that the miraculous metals they're cursed by Freemasons, the ones that have the star above the cross. And
I've heard this too, and if I were you, I wouldn't worry about this at all. And if you find that you're worried about it, go to a Catholic religious goods store. In Philadelphia, you've got several. And just buy a miraculous metal that's produced by a Catholic production company. Are you with me?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I think we had a little mix-up on the phone line. Sorry, Teresa. In Florida, rather, yes. Chances are you're going to have some religious goods stores. And I would suggest just, first of all, don't worry about this. This is something that is not going to hurt you.
Okay, good.
Greater is he who is in you than he who is in the world. That's Jesus. And if you love Jesus and you're staying close to him, you're receiving the sacraments, etc., you're going to be okay. But if you have a miraculous metal that you're not sure, what is this? What is, you know, where did it come from?
These are a group of them that were given to me. I have ones that I had checked at the time. I got mine specifically from the church where Catherine Laboure, where they showed her body in France.
Wonderful.
So I had gotten that one. So I knew mine were right, but then I went and checked around. And then I think it was 2 years ago or something.
I know. I'm familiar with this. And I know that there is an argument out there saying that the Freemasons or other people are cursing miraculous metals and they're making them look different. They say that about some of the rosaries too. All I'm saying is you don't have to be afraid of those things. Don't be afraid of it because it can't hurt you. If you have something like that that's questionable, you can either throw it away or maybe better yet, just bury it in the ground, be done with it. And then only get a religious metal like that from a trusted source and everything will be fine. But no need to fret or worry or be, you know, to be bothered by it. There's an easy fix to this. That's my recommendation, Teresa. Thank you. We have to take a break and we'll be right back. Today, we'd like to thank Rosario, who is listening in New Mexico, for donating her 2014 Fiat 500. Classy. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles, trucks, boats, and RVs by visiting relevantradio.com/car. That's relevantradio.com/car.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Okay. All right. Let's go. Let's go to Carlos in San Antonio. Hi, Carlos.
Yes. How you doing, Patrick? I wanted to ask you if this is accurate. I've been Catholic all my life and as devout as I can be. And I believe the body, blood, soul, and divinity of and the Eucharist and the precious blood. One thing that happened about 10 years ago, a priest said during the Lamb of God, he said, you know, how they put a little piece of the host into the precious blood. Mm-hmm. And he said, this is the resurrected Christ. So therefore, when we receive the body or the blood, it is indeed the resurrected Christ. Mm-hmm. Was that correct?
Yes. Now, it's not called for in the rubrics of what the priest says at the altar. Right. I don't know if that's what you meant. But if
I think he was trying to educate us that actually, this is what's happening right now. He was trying to educate us that, you know, when I place this little section of the host into the precious blood, it becomes the resurrected Christ, and therefore that's why when we receive the Eucharist in either species is the complete body, blood, soul, and divinity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's correct.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, thank you so much. I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay. Oh, you're most welcome. Thank you. Good to chat with you. How about Marie now in Oakland? Good morning, Marie.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
I was just calling in response to an earlier call from Jeff.
Okay.
His sister went through IVF. And I know she's not Catholic, but I'm Catholic and I had IVF.
Okay, I'll pause. I think he, in that case, it was, it wasn't in vitro fertilization. It was artificial insemination, which is different.
Okay.
Related, but
well,
different.
But
go ahead.
I had that, and I also had a donor.
Okay.
But I'm Catholic, and I didn't realize at the time that it was a sin.
Right.
And then I realized during my pregnancy it was, but I didn't realize how big of a sin it was.
Mm-hmm.
And, I just was calling to say to Jeff that maybe he can explain it to his sister in love and gentleness because the die has been cast. She has this baby.
That's right.
What does he want her to do? Does he? I have a huge cross of knowing that I did this, that it has implications for my soul, even though I went to confession, but it has implications there. I offended God I kind of put a burden on my child because she might end up having a lot of siblings. I don't know. I don't know what it means for her. And I don't ever want to tell her about it. But it's a hard thing.
Are you married?
I think about it all the time. Yes, yes.
So is part of your concern that she would know that the donor is not her father?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I even talked to my priest about it, and he said, don't tell her. She doesn't need that burden. It's for you to carry, which is true. Mm-hmm. But Jeff could sure tell his sister what this means to him and our beliefs. But please be kind, because now it's happened and there's no going back. And she probably needs support from her family. Everyone who is a new mom does. And I just wanted to plead with him to, while he's correct, to understand that kindness and love is really needed.
Definitely. Most definitely. I'm glad you're pointing that out. May I ask another question, Marie? I'm assuming your husband knows, right?
Yes, but he's not Catholic. And when I have told him, like, oh no, this is actually not a good thing, he gets kind of angry about it. Like, it even makes him angry with the church. How can they say this? And I think the perspective of people who go through IVF is, this is a beautiful thing, or even artificial insemination. Like, this is a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. There's a child that came out of this. How can it be wrong? That's what I thought. Mm-hmm. And it takes a lot of time even to realize it's almost an unfolding of understanding, like, oh, it is wrong. Oh no, it's wrong in this way. And I'm even still coming to more realizations, like, okay, this actually is going to affect my child. And I put this on her, and it's like this never ending burden.
Yeah. Did you say that you didn't, that you weren't aware at the time and you only found out subsequently?
When I first started the process, mm-hmm. I didn't think there was anything wrong with it. And then when I was pregnant, I went to a Catholic bookstore and I just looked it up in the catechism, and it's a sin. And then I listened to shows like yours, or I listened to other shows, and there's a bigger explanation about what it really means. And it's like, oh no, I didn't want to do this.
So let's pause there, if you don't mind. We'll pause for a second. So that is something to keep in mind, that you did not do something, initially at least, that you knew this is contrary to God's law, but I'm going to do it anyway. You weren't thinking that way. You were doing something you thought was at least permissible, right?
Yes, in some ways, but also it was, I want a child so badly that I don't want to find out.
Like you had a little in the back of your mind, maybe there's
an inkling,
something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, this might not be right. My mom didn't, she also asked me to not do it, and I thought, well, she doesn't know, and she didn't back it up. I am not blaming her at all. Mm-hmm. No, not at all. But it's like, maybe there was a little something telling me,
right,
look into this. And I thought, no, it can't be wrong. It can't be wrong to do this.
Right. And that's the voice of your conscience. That's, you know, your conscience is functioning properly. So my question now, I guess, Marie, is you, I think you told me you did go to confession, right?
Yes.
Okay. So that's, at least that big part of it is accomplished. You know that you've been forgiven. Jesus has judged this and forgiven you for it. The hard part for all of us, it seems, is to forgive ourselves. Absolutely. Yeah. So I would recommend, among other things, number one is this pain that you feel, this anxiety or anguish or however you would describe what your emotions are, offer those to the Lord as a reparation for what happened. And there's great spiritual value in these feelings of remorse and anguish. I don't wish it on you. And, you know, it's not as though, hey, you know, I hope you feel more of this, but not that at all. But rather, if you give these things to the Lord and offer that suffering up, they're very powerful offsets by, you know, by way of making reparation. And I think it will also bring you a sense of peace over time, that you're not just living with these emotions, you're actually putting them to good use by offering them up for the Lord, or to the Lord, I should say. And that will help purify you, and it will also help bring you some peace and consolation. I'm sure of that. And of course, the issue of going to confession, you've already taken care of that. So that's a huge part of the puzzle right there. And then as time goes on, how old is the baby now? How old is the daughter now?
12.
Okay. Well, it's one of those things where if she lives her whole life and never knows, okay, she lives her whole life and never knows. If it turns out that she does, then I'm sure you've given thought to what you would say to her. And that's good. Have that at the ready. But I think it sounds to me like you're not only on the right track, but I also am really glad that you emphasize the importance of being gentle, tactful, loving in talking to his sister about what happened, right?
Yeah, and also understanding she doesn't know. A lot of Catholics don't even know, and she's not even Catholic.
Yeah.
She has no idea.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
And it's just... charity is a must for people Absolutely. Who don't understand.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I hope that as time goes on, your sense of anguish goes down and goes away. I think over time it'll happen. You're welcome. Hey, what can we do to get your husband to start listening to Relevant Radio? Maybe we'll get him into the Catholic Church. That'll make things better.
Oh, my husband?
Yeah. Did I say brother? I meant husband. Sometimes. I'm sorry.
I leave it on in the car on purpose, and he listens sometimes.
Oh, good.
I'm always hoping that when he listens, it's something that will perfectly soften his heart.
Well, please God, please God. I'm sure he's a fine man, and hopefully he'll find something here on Relevant Radio that will help move things in that direction. Well, I'm glad you called, Marie.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Hang in there. Thank you. Let's see. How about Randall in Long Beach? Good morning, Randall.
Morning, Patrick. Because we don't have much time, I'll try and keep it short. Okay. Main thing I was trying to call in, and thank you also for all the work you guys do.
Sure.
The main thing I was going to call in, I think you're spot on with your mention about the abolition movement with slavery and abortion. And that's kind of my thing that I think, you know, the pro-life movement, as well-intentioned as it is, it doesn't do enough, and it kind of compromises and leaves loopholes open and stuff like that.
Okay.
So, like,
how so?
Know, the main thing for me is, well, like the exemptions, they basically just don't go far enough. My thing is basically we need more abolitionists. We need people to just be hard-line. Abortion is murder, and it's never acceptable under no circumstance. And kind of like Lila Rose was talking about with Trump, how, you know, he'll allow certain babies to be, you know, still dead. He's not going to abolish it totally. The same thing applies to the pro-life movement, where in a lot of states that have already made a lot of ground, like Oklahoma or Louisiana, the pro-life movement is actually supporting legislation to oppose the outright abolition of abortion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm an all or nothing person. If
exactly.
we have and to make progress incrementally, you know, okay, sometimes you can only make progress incrementally. I understand that. But in terms of toleration of abortion as such. I'm all or nothing. And in my case, it's nothing. And like you are too, just I'm an abolitionist. I want it gone. I want it abolished. I want it illegal. I may never live to see that, but that's what I'm hoping for.
Like, it's a long fight. And like I said, just like in, I guess, in England, their abolition movement, it took decades and stuff. Oh, yeah. And like I said, every time the abolitionists who were Christians would get a bill that was gaining steam to actually abolish the slave trade, the moderates would come in and be like, okay, instead of abolishing it, we'll just, you know, give them more, you know, they'll put loopholes on it or like make it smaller and smaller. And they made the same arguments where like, we can't handle abolishing it right now. We have to wait. We have to delay it.
I know.
Like I said, in the long run, they were an impediment to the abolition of slavery.
Well, we shall overcome just like they did in due time and with God's help. That's for sure. Thanks for the call, Randall. Wish there were more time, but I'll be back again tomorrow. And in the meantime, I'll pray for you. Please pray for me. God bless you. No!